Namaste. Good morning, everyone. Today is a special day as I have my mother with me. To share some aspects of her journey. Some of you have written over the last few years about the opportunity to get to hear from her, her experience of awakening. Her path is called the path of Shakti Sadhana. The energy, the force. And so, as the cliche goes, all roads lead to the same destination. So with an open mind, if one hears what she went through experientially, I'm quite sure it would be of tremendous benefit. I will be showing her drawings as she speaks, some she has specifically earmarked for this talk. Her entire experience was an experience of visions seen in her meditations, which was a process that lasted for about 3 to 4 years. And then it reached a logical culmination. So there is a lot of visual referencing. And it is so enjoyable, which I feel you will also, at the end of this brief sharing, perhaps enjoy seeing what a spiritual journey could also look like. So now I would ask my mother to take over and share whatever she'd like to share. This is unrehearsed. It is unplanned as such. You know, we were informed it would have been more professional to do a slideshow of her drawings. None of that is going to happen. I'm going to actually physically hold them up for you. So do pardon the amateur attempt at this and go with the flow. Okay.
Good morning, everyone. First of all, you have to excuse me for my bad throat. And I hope I can make you understand what it is to go within. So whatever we are living our life, whatever we are thinking, whatever we are doing, it's first happening in our subtle body. So the course I joined, let me do this beautiful journey, which unfolded visually for me, because that's my best form of perception. My learning happens through visually seeing and then believing. So this journey started with a certain vibration in my body. And initially, of course, I didn't know what was going on because nobody else in the group was saying anything. So I kept quiet even. But when this continued, I brought it to the notice of my guru. And I was talking a language which we don't talk in daily living. And that was that I'm feeling some chakras are moving in my body. So he said, chakro ke chakro mein mat padho. So I was wondering what that meant. He didn't explain what it means. But I went on and then I thought that it's better that I start illustrating these drawings. So what I came up with, finally, to understand the chakras and the nadi system. So you see, I'm showing you the seven main chakras and the three main nadis, that is Ida, Pingala, and Sushumna. Sushumna is the central nadi. The blue one is Ida, and the red one is Pingala. Now the blue one draws the moon energy, or that is the mind, to do with the mind, mental energy. And the right one is the Sushumna, the red one, that draws in the prana shakti, the breath that we take in with the air, with the breath. So this, then they cross each other at every chakra. And these chakras then regulate the flow of energy to different parts of the body through the nervous system. That is, in the subtle body, they are called nadis. Understood? Now, when the chakra, you can put it down, Gautam, when the chakras are functioning, that means we are regulating the flow of prana to the different organs, regulating it. It's just like a regulator for a fan. You know, if it is either it is slow, either it is fast, either it is medium. Some chakra is not working properly, some is working properly. And that all depends on a mental and emotional well-being. Now this each, I'm only talking about the chakras now. Chakras don't have anything to do with Kundalini. With the functioning of the chakras, we start drawing in as understanding improves and thinking gets a balance. We start drawing in new consciousness, a new way of thinking, a new way of being. So my study has been to the subtle body. If the subtle body is healthy, the physical body automatically is a byproduct, will experience health. So quite for how many months, I think the chakras kept rotating and moving and doing that job before the Kundalini energy, as we call it, started. Now people, or generally what the scriptures have talked about is the ascending energy. They don't talk about the descending energy. But my observation of the technique that I was doing, that it was focusing more on the descending energy than the ascending energy. So that is the learning that came to me through the contemplation on the descending and the ascending energy. So the ascending energy is the sun energy.
You mean the descending energy?
Descending energy. That is, we are getting from the sun. So this descending energy filters through our crown chakra, Ajna chakra, Vishuddhi, and Anahat. These are the main centers which are getting the descending energy. That is the sun energy, which we call it the energy of the divine wisdom. So what is happening? Wisdom is opening up every time we do the certain breaths, and we keep getting new insights. And also when these few chakras develop, then an opening to the subtle consciousness also happens. And ultimately, whatever knowledge I have gained through these breaths, it's the knowledge from the cosmos, original knowledge also, according to my understanding. It's not a scriptural knowledge. Okay, so now once these chakras are becoming more or less open and moving in harmony, then the ascending energy is activated. By ascending, now this energy, which is already there, we are functioning only because of this. You see, this is like a smoke curving and going up. That's why they called like a snake, you know. So we, all our daily life, all our living, doing, work, everything, that much energy we have been provided by nature. But when we want to enhance that energy, we do some sadhana, those who are on this path, particular type of sadhana, and slowly, slowly enhance it to flow more and more, so that we are more energetic, we can give, help the, what you call, the descending energy, the knowledge, which is the knowledge, and the, this is called the fire earth, which is the Kundalini energy. It is from the core of the earth. Now, energies are the same, but in order to be creative, both of them have to meet. You know, otherwise there's, so when both of them meet, then the right and the left brain come into a balance. It's very interesting. Otherwise, you are more or less working on the, with the mind. That is in duality. Good, bad, right, wrong, all that goes on. So with the understanding of the subtle body, that how the balance happens in the subtle body first, before it happens in the physical body. You know, so that requires the understanding how your mind works, how your emotions work, how emotions affect the mind and mind affects the emotion, and how these two affect the flow of prana. And that's how problems arise when there's imbalance in the emotions, in the mental dialogue, and our breath work. Then the physical organs start getting affected. So, but the sun energy and the earth energy, the descending energy and the ascending energy, are both same, but the form changes. Okay, now the descending energy
this
you see the earth on the side, so the sun energy is penetrating the earth and goes and settles down at the core of the earth and becomes fire. That is the lava and volcanic fire that you see. And in the body, it comes down through the crown chakra, through the head, and settles down at the base of the spine as Kundalini, as the fire. In the physical body, it becomes the fire at the base of the spine, and in the earth, at the core of the earth, it becomes the volcanic fire. So for, in the first few breaths, we access the descending energy. In the last few breaths, we activate, I mean, this course activates the earth energy. And then when the earth energy starts moving, and when it's connects with the with the sun energy, then creativity starts fructifying. Do you understand? So like on the earth, when does the creativity fructify? The sun energy is down, and the as a fire, and filtering upwards as also knowledge, divine wisdom. So if you see the earth plantation, how it starts surfacing. They require the sun, and the sun provides them, and then slowly the plant starts surfacing from the earth, and it starts flourishing. In the same way, the lowest chakra, that is Muladhara, is earth element. See, whatever the cosmos is made of, or the planets, or the universe, of the five elements, in the same way, our physical body is also made of the five elements. So we have earth first, the next we have water, Swadhisthan. So it's all provided. Then we have the Manipur, the fire. Then we have Anahat, the air, and Vishuddhi, the space, and so on. So the same principle works on the physical body as it works on the planet. So creativity starts functioning in procreation, happens in the human kingdom or animal kingdom or the, any organism. And also when we see art flourishing, music, some people are musical, so the great singers, the great artists, that means that the Kundalini energy is resting in that chakra. They have evolved to that chakra where this is concerned. So that's the process of actually evolution. We start from and with the two energies, the divine wisdom and the fire energy, Kundalini energy, divine love, that is divine love. So when the two get together, creativity starts happening. This is the main thing of the Kundalini energy, which there's a lot of fear attached to Kundalini energy. All of you must have read and have some ideas, you know. So if any time you feel like talking about them, we can talk about them. And all this also led me to the spiritual heart, which according to me, I term as the spiritual heart. And that is very interesting because it happened with a lot of the first time it happened, it was like what they call Shaktipat, the total scattering of the human psyche, to give me a glimpse of that. And it is a process during this my sadhana that it happened, because I had read long back Nisargadatta Maharaj's book, I Am That. In that he says, I am that. And then I came, Ramana Maharishi says, your inquiry should be, who am I? So that was going on in my mind, who am I? And who is that? You know, what is that? So this understanding came to me with this, the course I was following. And it is, this came with lot of shattering. I mean, if I was not a very strong person, my nervous system would have gone like destroyed. It's such a powerful electric shock, you know, and suddenly everything scattered and only one thing remains, this shining star. And this, I got another aspect of it while in meditation. I found that my body is dissolving, you know, and what is left is this shining, this star over here, you know. And this came during different stages of my sadhana. And this is all because of the Shakti and descending and ascending energy meeting at certain points during the process. And the final, of course, family. The final was this very clear that this is, so I term this as the spiritual heart. Yeah, so this is how we come, each one, each system or each psyche follows its own path. And our core desire is delivered to us through that. Everything leads to one. Either it is the Bhakti Marg, either it is the Gyan Marg, or this Shakti Marg. But whatever is right for one, one is drawn to that. And unconsciously, I was drawn to this. So this is in a, you can say, nutshell, what I feel or I know of Kundalini energy. Other things like Tantra, Tantric, and this are a branch of this. If you follow the same thing in a different pattern, different rhythm, it will give you that result, which is, of course, not advisable for us. This path is very sweet, simple, and leads you generally to know your truth, final truth. So that's what I have experienced. And if you have any question, please ask.
Before that, I would like to add that the result, you could say, for want of a better word, is harmonious relationships and peace and equanimity. If you are following this path, or any path for that matter, and you feel that you are enjoying the experience, but your relationships are in shambles, you have no peace of mind, then I think one can conclude that the experience has not reached the heart. So I had asked my mother to speak a bit about chakras and harmonious relationships. You see, otherwise, why did Advaita sages always tend not to focus on experiences? Because the human ego gets stuck on experiences and wants more of those experiences. That is the pitfall of experiences. So a measure, as I am always fond of saying, Ramana Maharshi's measure, when asked, how does one know a sage is a sage? He said, by the degree of peace that one feels in their presence and the sense of respect one feels for them. So ultimately, the experience must permeate daily living. Without harmonious relationships and without equanimity and peace, deliverance has not happened. Would you like to say something about that?
See, I would like Gautam is saying, the path I followed, I had to use a lot of contemplation to think, to come to an understanding how I can work at a harmonious relationship. And when that process started, I found the different chakras moving in a different direction. And I understood that all my the emotional issues were settled in the issues or emotions and issues regarding them were settled in the Swadhisthan chakra. So now how to get them out of Swadhisthan chakra, how to resolve them? And then my contemplation went on to Manipur chakra. Now the Manipur chakra, I consider as the hub of our life. You know, we live and die in the lower three chakras, that is Manipur, Swadhisthan, and Muladhara. Muladhara holds the most ancient memories of fear and insecurity and addictions and etc. So those are very difficult to get rid of in one lifetime. But these other relationships, which are a hub of Manipur Chakra, are the ones that cause the emotional problems of ill will, spite, hatred, lust, greed, whatever you want to call it. So these have to be resolved first. So it's a very intricate system of looking at oneself, going within and understanding one's own psyche. No, not only intellectually, but what is it doing to my these thoughts or these issues of ambition and power, and what are they doing to my physical body, to the organs related to that chakra. So Manipur, we have all our digestive system attached. To the heart, we have all emotional issues attached. And Swadhisthana, of course, all jealousies, etc., they are filled with that. So since Manipur would become overburdened with also carrying all these emotions, they are divided among these chakras. So the right, well, one has to stop living in the right left brain and slowly bring the wisdom of the right brain into it. And as one, the intellect starts looking at these chakras. So this is a self inquiry. Okay, if I stop doing this, why am I doing this? It's not required. Where is it coming from? I'm coming from a past script. So you start weaning out all the useless stuff, and the chakras start getting lighter and lighter. And the drama activity from Swadhisthana and Muladhara start dropping off, and the Manipur's language starts coming better as the understanding arises, and more peace within the body, within the organs, within the physical well-being, and more energy is then generated. And with this, whatever resolved, we resolve at our Manipur chakra will affect our heart chakra. We will not be moving out of resentment or jealousy, or the Vishuddhi will not voice what the Manipur was throwing up. And we start coming more and more to our truth. So it's a very balancing. Advaita is, we are, I think this is more of a doing and self-analysis, whereas Advaita is moving from without to within. We are working from in the Shakti Sadhana, as I think, we are working from within to without. So this self-inquiry is both ways self-inquiry. When going within, we are working from listening and analyzing and contemplating and understanding. It's very interesting, actually. So in the other way, we are contemplating, looking at our machinery, how it is working, how the wiring is done, how the blocks are created. And so how are the blocks created in the subtle body that affect our physical body? That means either our thinking or well-being or feeling of illness or anything. Because any negative that we repeat to ourselves, every thought that is lying dormant and keeps coming up, whether in a different form, it starts clogging. And that clogging becomes, that is, prana starts getting clogged. The energy starts clogging. and as it is moving through the subtle nadi, and if it has become, it has become like a jelly-like dark substance, like you see the blood that clots, you know, and then that blocks the flow of energy to the related part in the physical body. Now, in the physical body, it becomes like oxygen and blood. What is in the subtle body, energy, in the physical body, it becomes blood and oxygen. And in the subtle body, it's prana, and we term it as energy also. So that's how then blocks are created in our thinking, in our well-being, in our delivery of things, and we get stuck in a situation. Whereas if then we meditate, when we meditate or contemplating, slowly, slowly that block dissolves because of self-analysis, self-understanding. So the same, I feel that Advaita and the systems of both self-inquiry from within and self-inquiry from without. What do you say, Guru?
Yes, and I think as I started out by saying, ultimately it leads to peace of mind and equanimity. I'd also like to ask my mother to share a bit on the third eye, the Ajna Chakra, the eye of wisdom, and the visual that I'm fond of Ganpati, which is the elephant-headed god and the trunk, and just share her experience with that vision that she had.
You see, now coming to this course has demystified for me our deities, that is Ganpati, symbols like trident, a swastika, bell. So these are the workings of the inner body and the shape that energy takes, that the rishis in their wisdom put it in a certain form for different purposes. Like, for now, these visuals I have drawn, which unfortunately one can't show them to you all at once. I felt, now when I meditate, or used to meditate, at that time when the journey was still going on, then my Ajna Chakra expanded. And it was going within, studying everything. You know, and that time the Manipur Chakra was full of all its worldly desires, whatever. And going to Manipur Chakra, looking at everything. And the vibrations of that Ajna Chakra, you know, going on like this, I suddenly felt this is, and my hand in those days for 5 years would automatically put forth what I was seeing. And when I saw, I said, this looks like a Ganpati's trunk, you know, and the expansion of the Manipur Chakra became so expanded that is why the Ganpati has such a large belly, you know, so it's so beautiful, because all this learning came afterwards when I was looking at my visuals. And then also this led to, of course, the form of Ganpati, why people worship Ganpati, because it's the wisdom center. And when we go to school, or when we parents do the Ganpati Homam, or whenever auspicious thing is starting, we do that. That is to make the individual unconsciously function on that Ajna Chakra. When we do the rituals by putting flowers and all that, it's a focus on that. So they have devised beautiful means. And then another thing I saw, that which we call the process of death of the mind. This nadi over here, Sushumna, from at the base of the neck, that is medulla oblongata, it goes up, you know, and one branches off and comes to the brain. One goes to the brain inside. So that's how we are functioning through the mind all the time. When it is not balanced, when the right-left brain are not balanced, we only work through the left brain, logical brain. But when I went through the process of death of, death of the mind, as you call it, the branch moved over the head and entered the heart. So what I saw was this Manipur chakra with its elongated snout sort of a thing,
Ajna chakra,
would go to all the chakras and collect all the issues and bring them and deposit them into the heart. So then one is functioning at the heart level. So when this starts happening, then automatically the process we follow, it is done, that no idea of any negation, doubt, decay, disease, fear, death enters the mind. No ill will, spite, hatred, disgust. Everything is taken as is and, you know, looked at it that way. Everyone is and doing what is to be done by that happen, is to happen through that body, mind, organism. And then I saw the bell. I think they are at the end of the book. You can show them. The last few pages. The how did the bell come into being? I found that the central channel, Sushumna, moves up to Ajna. And here that flame starts vibrating. And after I drew it, this is the bell. This is one, it formed as the bell, you know. And the central nadi is the Sushumna nadi. And after the bell comes the Trishul. So these symbols have come from inner experiences, which the rishis, as I say, have put down as symbols and we worship them. So this is a beautiful journey. And when there's a goddess, we are praying for Lakshmi, then you are operating at a certain vibratory level. It's very fascinating. Anything more I can add?
Would you like to close on this?
Somebody had a question about dropping the body. What happens, or what is, I didn't understand the question. This is my experience of when I die. I mean, I was shown, my question was on my journey was, who am I? Where have I come from? And where am I going? So this is where I'm going. So when I go, what is left behind is this yin-yang symbol. Okay, all the elements which are holding the body together, that is the chakras. They are the water element, earth element, you know, air, etc. Those elements started leaving my body and my spirit went up through the Sushumna from my Ajna chakra out. Understood? So this was my vision of dropping my body and moving on.
What was the yin yang?
Yin yang is a bundle of hopes and fears and desires, which are left behind and are gone into rest, whatever. And when it's time for it to manifest again, it will come with new consciousness. I think Ramesh used to say there's no rebirth, something like that. So it's not rebirth of the same consciousness, it's the rebirth of the ego. Ego which either wants to come back and teach or if has any desire in it of further evolution or at what level, one doesn't know. So this is what takes rebirth to continue its journey. So yesterday, like I was explaining to my class, there is no death. Because if you see from childhood, you become youth, you have dropped one body, you have come into another body. Then as you grow more mature, you drop that, and then you go more mature, you drop that, till you reach a certain age when the functioning of the body is not supporting you enough. So you drop that and then take on where you left off again. See, an apple tree will always produce apples, whether it is cut off or whether it is finished. In the same way, human, we are already creating. It's very interesting. So where's the question of death is the fear? What is the fear? Fear of the unknown. This is also, we've gone through the unknown. I never knew I was going to grow like this. I was going to have children. So every time it's a fear of the unknown. So there is nothing to fear. It's all the planned process that is going on in the creation. Like the sun rises, the moon rises and sets everything, and the weathers come and go. And then come again. So it's a process. Of course, now that depends on our peace of mind. How peaceful, what peaceful life we live and help others to live. And accordingly, we'll move on to the next phase.
So if anyone would like to share anything or ask any questions now, you're welcome.
No, I know it's all very rushed and difficult to absorb at all one time. So anytime you have any questions, you can write to Gautam or whatever. And
yes, Kumar.
Namaste, Santosh ma'am, and namaste, Gautam sir. So
can't hear you.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
Just hold on, Kumar. We might have to change some setting. Just a sec. Is this? Can you speak now?
Yes. Can you hear me now?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Namaste, Santosh ma'am, and namaste, Gautam sir. Blessed to be here. So my question is the about the subtle sound that is heard in meditation, the anhadnad. So how do we know if it's a genuine subtle sound or tinnitus, which is a medical condition of ringing in the ear? And on the same lines, how do we know it's a genuine spiritual experience or it's the mind projecting and playing games?
Well, see, it's my truth. I don't have to doubt it. Why would I doubt it? And the Om sound is not that, what you call it, tinnitus. That's a word for it.
Tinnitus.
Yeah, it's not that. And the first time I heard it, I was doing the process of my technique. It was I was surprised because every time I would do a certain posture, I would hear that. I couldn't stop laughing. You see, it was so beautiful. In order to hear it only, I would do that posture. So you need not doubt yourself. When we say that I doubt myself and I and myself, who's the self? What self are you talking about? Which self of yours do you doubt? I don't trust myself. Why? It's that self that is residing in you, who's giving you guidance, and you're saying that I don't trust myself. I doubt myself. I'm shocked when we are sitting for meditation and somebody has a beautiful, meaningful experience and says, but I doubt myself. If you are going to doubt yourself, how are you going to trust anyone else? You understand? So these are all misconceptions of our own. You doubt yourself, that's why the others will doubt yourself. You'll never be able to speak your truth. So please, if you are having any understanding on this subject or experience of this subject, don't doubt yourself. How will you? You're putting a block in your own spiritual or growth or evolution or whatever.
Okay.
Thank you so much. That was something I needed to hear.
Very good.
Okay. Is there anyone else who would like to share anything? Else we can just sit in silence for a couple of minutes. And then thereafter, I think since my mother's cough is also not subsiding, she can perhaps take leave and we can continue briefly since there isn't much time left for any other sharing. Yes, we have Sunita here. Yes, Sunita.
Namaste Gautam ji, namaste Santoshma. My question for today to you is, it's some years back, I was introduced into a meditation system. You know, I was in my teenage that time. It was like 30, 35 years back, maybe 30 years back. That particular teaching was to activate the Kundalini energy and bring back to the Agnya Chakra and then put it back. So I was in hostel and I used to go and attend these meditation sessions. As soon as they did this, for 1 week, I was totally lost. You know, there were so many energies. I used to cry for, you know, unknown reasons and all. And then the person who did this, they said that I was unable to handle these energies and they settled it back. So after that, I get some kind of, whenever I close my eyes, get some kind of colors or visions. So as you said, it's not doubting myself, but is it right or I'm just imagining?
See, now if you are still at that time when you're meditating,
mm-hmm.
I mean, no thoughts are coming mm-hmm. up and down in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
For a moment, you are in that stillness. You have gone within. And these colors are the colors of your chakras, the elements.
Okay.
Okay. So you don't have doubt. Unless if you are in that state when you're seeing the color, see from which center it's coming. Is
okay.
It from, if you know about the chakras, that is.
Okay.
Is it coming from the heart? The color is at the Manipur. As the navel, or the Swadhisthana, or the Agnya, or Vishuddhi. Start identifying where you're seeing, or you're just seeing a jumble of colors.
No, I see from the Agnya Chakra.
So then your Agnya, at that time, if you see yellow, you have to see where it is looking, where the Agnya Chakra, Agnya,
mm-hmm.
is looking. Is it looking at your heart chakra? Is it looking at your Manipur chakra? So start becoming aware.
Okay.
You are going to self-develop yourself. Okay. I want to study what's happening. Where am I seeing this color? Yes?
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
You get an idea?
Yeah, I understand. So I used to just think and then it used to disappear because the colors keep changing every time. Sometimes it's all...
Because that is must be changing because of your thought. You know, suddenly you must be thinking something which is related to the heart. So the color will change.
Yeah, okay.
And if you're thinking something of any relationship, the color will change. The color.
Start so beautiful.
And noting it down. That's very important. So that's what, as Gautam was saying, that many books, etc., people say that in meditation, when you have an experience, ignore it. Otherwise, you will not progress. My contention is, even my guru said, ki don't chakro ke chakro mein mat pado, you know, just ignore, ignore. So I used to tell him, if I ignore, how will I tell the world what is happening? What is the subtle body capable of? How I need to take care of it? You know, so because those visuals were like, they are channeled. They are not, I will not take the credit of saying I've drawn them because my hand would move automatically, picking up the crayons, picking up the pencil. Whatever was handy, children's crayon or pencil or pencils or paint box, they've come out so precise. Each visual matches the other. It can't be done by human. No painting you can do twice. No drawing you can do twice, freehand. So it's, you have to note down your experience, whatever it is. Might not mean anything at that time. But as you keep noting down and you look back, the whole story opens up. Yeah, had to, this purification had to happen. So this happened, this purification had to happen, this happened. That's how the spiritual heart manifested for me in its full glory. So if your spiritual heart is shining like this, that is reflecting in your aura. You understand, when we say the person has clean aura, or like Lord Buddha had his aura 5 kilometers wide or 5 meters wide, that means his mental, emotional, spiritual bodies were all in perfect harmony. So as we get clearer and clearer, aura becomes start becoming brighter because the inner spiritual hearts getting cleaned of dust on it together. Yes?
Yes. One more question, if I'm not taking too much of your time. So when we say that we drop the body, and I just saw the picture, you know, you showed, that means the yin-yang energy, which you say all of our desires, emotions, wants, needs, jealous, whatever, you know, the worldly things, what happens to that? Do we leave behind that or do we carry it with some of the teachings? I mean, it's not teaching, some of where I've read, they say that you need to clean your thoughts or stop having any desires now so that you don't carry those negative energies or your, I don't know the exact word to tell or describe, with to your another, manifestation of your soul into another body or another creation. So what happens to that generally?
No, my guru said opposite. If you have any desire, please fulfill it.
Okay.
Do not suppress it because you'll come back with it. If you feel like eating an apple, eat it. If you feel like dressing in a certain way, please dress.
Okay.
You don't have to follow any system that you have to wear white or you have to wear red or you have to wear nothing. You want to go and listen to another person's master's talk, go. See, there should be no desire that I wanted to do this, but I can't do it. Don't let it become an indulgence. But whatever you want to do, please do. If then something is left behind, like many masters who are absolutely clear, they don't understand Kundalini and all that stuff because they're clear channels. You know, whatever, if they have a desire, they fulfill it and forget about it. They'll not keep, you know, dwelling on it, but then it becomes a guilt. So guilt is one of the things which hold you back. So there should be no guilt. It came up, you desired, you got what you wanted, and so you no longer want to have it again, but you want to have it. But it should not stay in the mind that I didn't do it, because thoughts come, God, you know, I can't think like this. How can the mind do its thinking? You have to think and let it pass. Isn't it? Yeah. So when I say fulfill your desires, I don't mean go overboard with them. Each one has to be fulfilled and dropped till you are satisfied. Okay, no more now. It happens. So if we are going to listen, you don't have any desire, don't think this, we'll think more like you tell, think this, don't think of a monkey. But you keep thinking of a monkey only then. You're adding to it.
Okay.
Thank you. It's been a blessing. Thank you.
Okay.
This thing about Buddha's aura reminds me of a joke that I read. Where someone asked Sadhguru, someone said that I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw my wife sitting up in bed. And she had this glow, this beautiful aura around her. And it was a beautiful sight to see. And was it really her aura? And what I saw, was it real? And he said, I don't think so. I think she was checking your WhatsApp messages while you were asleep.
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll just sit in silence for a couple of minutes. And then we will be off screen for another 2-3 minutes. I'll come back while we rearrange the setup. So, I hope you enjoyed this joint satsang, and thank you for being here with us and listening to this most beautiful journey my mother has been through. You know, many times her disciples and students would ask me, what does it feel like to have a mother like yours? And I found it so difficult to answer. And then I read somewhere, I can't recall which book, that it's like asking a person, how does it feel to not walk with a stone in your shoe? And if you never had a stone in your shoe, you will not know what it means to walk without a stone in your shoe. Because since birth, the conditioning, the exposure has been under her presence. So there is no way to answer this very difficult question. Just changed it to gallery view so that she can see all of you. I think my mother might slip into a long meditation, so you'll just take your leave now and I'll be back. There is one question that I received which I'd like to answer. This person has realized the essence of the teachings as being peace of mind and has experienced tremendous peace of mind as a result. There's a gradual feeling of pure consciousness prevalent. But this pure consciousness is taking me towards bhakti. I feel so much love for God. So the question is, will the path of feeling love for God, bhakti, take me away from the peace of Advaita? This teaching has delivered to me peace of mind in daily living. That is established. What has emerged is the love for God. Now the fear is that the bhakti, the love for God, will it take me away from the peace of non-duality? There can be no greater bhakti than that which is delivered by Advaita. Because if one truly lives the understanding that all there is consciousness, that everyone is an instrument of the divine. No matter how flawed we think some instruments are, including ourselves, if this teaching is lived, then one is seeing the one divine being in all. Isn't that the ultimate bhakti? When you no longer hold people accountable as individuals based on what they have done, but when you see that the entire manifestation, everything has emerged, so to speak, from the one source. When you accept that everyone is subject to the cosmic laws of genetics, conditioning, environment, etc., 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 then you are living bhakti. Then you see, you are living like the sun. The sun does not choose on whom to shine its rays upon. In that sense, that is pure love. So the result of living the understanding is living bhakti, not the bhakti between a subject and an object, and worshipping it and being in love with it, praying to it all the time. Because the nature of consciousness is love, not the dualistic love. As Rameshji would say, if consciousness is all there is, can consciousness harm itself? And if it cannot harm itself, its default nature is love. And peace cannot go away. Peace is always there. So this fear that I will lose my peace of mind is a false fear, so to speak. What these teachings have done is annihilated misconceptions based on doership, which result in blaming, accusing, hating, etc., 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 so that the thinking mind, which is creating all these imaginary scenarios and stories, gets disengaged. And all that is left is the presence of presence. That presence of presence is not going anywhere. It is the me with its baggage which is stepping all over this presence, clouding it, so to speak. And it is the annihilation of these misconceptions that results in the peace shining forth. Can it ever be that deep sleep is not peaceful? If it is not peaceful, it is not deep sleep. Deep sleep, which is the absence of me and my story, which is prevalent in the waking state, is always peaceful because the troublemaker is not there, so to speak. You see, the peace of deep sleep has not stepped in because the troublemaker ego with its sense of doership has stepped out. That is the gift of God, you could say. Our nature is peace. Our default setting is peace. Peace cannot go away. The one who is worried about peace going away, goes away. Because it always deals in possessions. And now the possession is, I have peace. What if I lose it? That is the one which needs to go. We can quickly squeeze in one or two questions or any sharing, and then we will end this. So if there is anything right now, you may put your hand up. And if not, we can call it a day. It's amazing that we delude ourselves. On one level, we accept the cosmic laws of the tides, the sunrise, the sunset, the earth rotating at a particular speed, revolving around the sun at a precise movement calculated by the divine cosmic force. But yet, when it comes to me and my life, my decisions, controlling my life, we forget that a force far vaster than we can comprehend is at play. It doesn't need our intervention. It really doesn't need our obsessive, compulsive intervention, trying to micromanage each moment of our lives. When there's such beauty, harmony, and precision in each moment, we lose sight of that, which of course is also part of the illusion. Till, by the compassion of the source itself, we come across a teaching, a teacher, a book maybe, some words, some insights, which remind us of this, which act as a catalyst on our journey home. The last year has been such a major reset for so many people. People could have not imagined that life would be reset the way it has been for many of us. Not in anybody's control. I'm somehow reminded of something quite funny. Before the pandemic, I would meet up with a group of friends, perhaps 2 to 3 times a week. And one of them was always criticizing people, to the extent that one or two friends, being intelligent, wondered if behind their backs they too were being criticized. So they stopped coming to the table. And you see, the ego is such a naughty thing. The minute you tell it not to do something, it does more of it. So it was pointless telling him to stop criticizing others. So one day, when he was criticizing someone, I mentioned to him, I said, you know, my teacher, Ramesh Balsekar, used to often quote these lines of the famous German mystic Meister Eckhart. All we can do is wonder and marvel at the magnificence and variety of God's creation. When I told him this, he burst out laughing and he said, oh, that's a fantastic quote. And over time, I saw that before he would start criticizing someone, he would say, all we can do is wonder and marvel at the magnificence and variety of God's creation. And the criticism started reducing and reducing and reducing. That is how the teaching works, you see. It finds its way around the antics of the ego.